Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Happy to be here with you on a Thursday. Hey, friends, we're enjoying some pretty nice spring weather out there. Not too bad. I know maybe a little bit of showers in the area over the weekend coming up and some things like that, but overall, not too bad. I was outside yesterday at Barley Oak. I live over in Old Mandeville, sitting on the lakefront, and great beer house over there if you haven't been there, there on the lake, and I was enjoying a beer in the late afternoon, just doing a little planning here for the NOLA Drink Show and things, and just staring out at the lake. And hey, it was a nice day for a Pilsner out there, and that's pretty much what I did. Today on the show, friends, we got a good show for you. What we do once a month, if you listen on a regular basis, you'll know we go to Bakery Bar, which is located at 1179 Annunciation there in the lower Garden District, the LLG, as we like to say, and kind of joke around right there. And Bakery Bar is a cool place that's where they now house the Debbie Does Dobage Bakery for the Dobage cakes that they do. And then there's also a savory menu, and they have a craft cocktail bar and so on and so forth. And what we do is once a month we go out there and we set up shop on a Tuesday. So we recorded that portion of the show, which is most of the show, there at Bakery Bar a couple days ago. And a lot of folks come out for their service industry brunch, which caters to bartenders and others in the service industry. And we just kind of see who pops up and we talk to them. So you never know really which way it's going to go. One of the things that we talk about here on the show, and this was somewhat organized, is T. Cole Newton, who is the owner and proprietor there of 12 Mile Limit on Telemachus, right off Tulane. Cole has a lot to say and a lot of good thoughts on some of the proposed safety measures that the mayor's office here in town has been proposing. Some of these things include installing more cameras. It seems to be outside. There was some rumor about requiring bars to to install cameras inside that fed into a central location. It seems it's we're talking about outside cameras, but these would feed into a central location run by the city. So some concerns there about privacy and other things. And another part of the proposal would be also to require bars to close their doors, not for business, but actually physically shut the doors at 3 a.m. That would be accompanied by potential quote-unquote sweeps by the police at that time, I guess to probably encourage patrons to go inside. This is being funded potentially anyway by monies coming from the Department of Homeland Security. It's a grant of tens of millions of dollars, and there's a lot of lack of clarity. There's a lot of concern out there of those in the service industry as well as others about what this might mean. So Cole and I just kind of kicked that around for a couple segments about some of the implications and things like that. And again, I just want to be clear, these are proposals at this point in time. This may be something where, you know, as oftentimes politicians do, they put out a very aggressive agenda or set of ideas, and then they're prepared to pull back to make it look like they've built consensus. That could be what we have here. But we talk a little bit about that stuff, and it's a very interesting conversation. We did invite somebody. We've been trying to actually get somebody from the mayor's office to come on the show to discuss these issues, and to this point they have basically not responded, or they did respond but then they didn't follow up. So we'll see, maybe we can organize something like that. If they don't want to show up, we're going to talk about it anyway. That's what we do here on the NOLA Drink Show. We have this couple bartender roundtables where some folks just show up and we talk about their careers and work in the industry and some things like that. So that will be very interesting. One of the things that I wanted to know, friends, that we really don't get into, big news of course if you're paying attention or happen to see this, especially those if you're in the service industry, you probably in New Orleans, but beyond, this made national news coming out of Mardi Gras last week. There was some controversy. Ann and Paul Tunderman, who are the founders and essentially owners, not essentially, they are owners of Tales of the Cocktail, which is the largest cocktail industry conference in the world, takes place the third week of July, roughly every summer here in New Orleans. And they do a whole host of other things in New Orleans and beyond. But they were invited to ride in Zulu on Mardi Gras Day. And again, I don't want to go too far into this, but the controversy was such that there was a racist remark made by Paul and then repeated by Anne on Facebook. Now, Zulu, and I'm not trying to represent Zulu in any fashion because I'm not a part of it, and I don't really know their traditions or their stories beyond just sort of the basics that everybody knows. But everybody, Zulu is an integrated parade, friends. So, you know, you don't, it's not just a black parade, an African-American parade. People of different colors, including white people, are able to ride and are invited to ride in Zulu. But everybody who participates in Zulu is required to wear blackface. It's part of their tradition. You can look into that, what that means. I'm not going to go down that road here. But so a lot of people were confused because they thought that this picture that showed up on Facebook of Anne in blackface was the entire controversy. That was not it. There were some racist remarks that were made. Basically, what she said is put on a little, or Paul said, and then she repeated in writing on Facebook, put on a little blackface and lose all of your media skills. This went on with a particular interview that they were doing, like a Facebook Live interview or something like that. So a lot of people, when this got out, obviously were quite clearly upset, and the post was deleted. But then this conversation kind of blew up, and I wanted to bring this up because I wanted to acknowledge it. We are going to do a future show, perhaps as early as next week. A friend of the show, Ashton Berry, who is an African-American woman who works in the service industry, took on the challenge and quite excellently engaged Anne, and they did a live Facebook broadcast on Monday. So we're going to revisit this. I just want, it's out there. I want people to know about it, and we're going to talk about it. That was not the scope of this show. If you are interested in seeing the live Facebook, or what was the live Facebook that Ashton put on with some help from the U.S. Bartenders Guild New Orleans chapter, essentially, it is on our Facebook page, NOLA Drinks, so do check that out. And again, we will revisit this topic, essentially racial realities in the service industry, in the very near future, perhaps again as early as next week. Also on next week's show, I wanted to mention that the inaugural Top Taco 2017 festival is coming up here on Thursday, March 23rd, and that's at 6:30 to 9:30 in the Spanish Plaza there at the Riverwalk. That's going to be a lot of fun. 5:30 to 9:30, and it's a taco competition. There's going to be drinks, all kinds of cool stuff. Next week, one of the organizers is going to be on the show with us, so I'm really excited about that. And then we're going to go, so that'll be next week on the 16th, and then on the 23rd, that Thursday after the show, which we're going to do some different stuff on the show, we're going to go cover the event. So stay tuned for that. Tune in next week and check that out. If you missed it last week, the show, we welcomed in the first hour Tracy Napolitano, who is the executive director of the also inaugural festival here, the New Orleans Bourbon Festival, which is that same weekend right afterwards, March 24th, that Friday, 25th and 26th. Grand tastings on Friday night of bourbon and Saturday night as well. There's a awards brunch on Sunday. Saturday features a whole bunch of seminars. Actually, on Thursday, March 23rd, there are also some dinners that are going on, paired dinners. A lot of luminaries in the bourbon world are going to be out there. A lot of the conversation also is going to be the integral role that New Orleans plays, of course, in the development of bourbon. And we talk about that. You can get the podcast from the show. Go to noladrinks.com and hear the interview with Tracy, which was very interesting, but wanted to flag your attention there. If you go to neworleansbourbonfestival.com, you can buy tickets and see all the information you need to see there. Same thing if you're interested in the Taco Festival taking place on Thursday, March 23rd. Again, go check out toptaconola.com and you can buy tickets there. Both these events actually also have a charitable component, which is really cool. So good eats, good drinks, good food. Lots of fun stuff there, and yeah, check out those two really good events. Friends, you know, I want, again, encourage you to listen to the show coming up today. It's a lot of fun. We do some different stuff. We're going to talk, as I said, right after the break here with T. Cole Newton of 12 Mile Limit. We're going to talk about the safety proposals by the mayor's office, and then a bunch of our different friends, bartenders, kind of pop by, and we just have a good laugh, talk about their careers and some other interesting things that go on there. So it is a good show coming up, and then afterwards we'll be back here right just to wrap things up at the very end of the show with just a few other notes. So friends, Brian Diaz here with you on the NOLA Drinks Show here in New Orleans, and hey, after the break we're going to be at Bakery Bar. We were at Bakery Bar. Come on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass wine you drink.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our Happier Hour menu.
Sobu's Happier Hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. We are doing our monthly visit, on-site visit here that we always do, taping the show at Bakery Bar here in the lower Garden District. It's always fun to come out here once a month, and as we usually do, we're kicking things off with the general manager here at Bakery Bar, Mr. Jeff Schwartz. Jeff.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jeff Schwartz.
Yes,
like
you
that
are.
Guy said. this is always a fun day. We get lots of fun visitors. I always look forward to it. So thanks for coming.
Yeah, always, Jeff. Thanks for hosting us. It is really a lot of fun. It's cool. You guys, and we touch on this usually, but what you guys typically do is you have brunch like you always do. Mm-hmm. But on Tuesdays, you kind of cater a little bit more maybe to the service industry.
Oh, yeah. We consider this our service industry brunch because, you know, you work all weekend. You serve brunch to the teeming millions. And, you know, we want a little special time just for bartenders to have their bartender brunch, bottomless mimosas, Tuesday morning, because it feels right. It feels right. That's our we're giving back to the community.
I like your giving spirit. Yeah. That's great. And it's a Tuesday, so a lot of people have off of work during this time. And as I told you, as you mentioned, the bottomless mimosas. So getting in here to do the show, you know, setting up the equipment off-site. A lot of cars out today. Man, I had to park around the corner, and then I was telling you as I was walking in, I had to park a ways away, stepped in a puddle, hat blew off my head. I missed the on-ramp or off-ramp getting over here, all that kind of stuff. So you gave me a mimosa when I walked in, and I've regrouped, I think, man.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of just full-on that week-long Mardi Gras hangover, just like getting back to life and remembering that you know, there's not a parade tonight.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. I always think of this as like a refocusing time. It's the time that people actually start acting on New Year's resolutions, start doing all the things that they were putting off for a couple of weeks just because you need to focus on what matters, and what matters is Mardi Gras. So
I like your perspective, Jeff. And you and I were talking about that right before we started taping here. The segment is that, you know, it is kind of here in New Orleans, it's a little different. People don't do the New Year's resolution thing, as you're saying, right after the first of the year. This is, as you said, sort of a second New Year. And I like that.
Yeah, it's absolutely second New Year's.
Yeah, and we did, you know, as I mentioned too to you, you know, we did the first show back after Mardi Gras. We did the show 2 days after, obviously on Thursday. For those of you who don't know, that would always be a Thursday, 2 days after Mardi Gras. And, you know, I think it was kind of a blur. Now, we discussed some serious topics. We had our show last week, which was with Mark Shetler and Molly Bird from the Proof Positive Project. We talked about sexual assault in the alcohol and service industry. So I don't want to belittle anything we did, because it was actually a very, very important show. And please go back and listen to the podcast if you didn't hear it. But everybody, I think, was kind of a little bit in that, still that dazed and confused phase after Mardi Gras had just ended.
Like a clubbed fish.
like a clubbed fish, exactly. See, I mean, I like where you're going with this, too. I'm trying to be kind of subtle and make people say, okay, we have our act together here. And no, like a clubbed fish.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're coming down from adrenaline highs. You might be coming down from other kinds of highs. You know, it's just it's a good time for personal reflection, for sure.
Yeah, there you go. I like that, personal reflection. That's good, too. And I think what I always like to say every year, even though I don't practice this type of stuff typically in my personal life, what I like to give up for Lent every year is Mardi Gras.
It's an easy one to give up.
Yes.
The thing about Mardi Gras, you can't. If Mardi Gras was every day, your life expectancy would plummet. So
yeah, oh geez, there is no truer word spoken than that, Jeff. So tell me a little bit about here at Bakery Bar. We did the show, maybe a couple weeks, 2-3 weeks before Mardi Gras was the last time that we were here, and you guys started. You know, it's a pretty new business. And people, just really quickly, we talk about this often, but, you know, it's the Debbie Des Dobage bakery.
Correct.
And then you also have, you know, full food menu, full bar, all that good stuff. But you guys started doing a King Cake Dobage this year, and I know that there was an incredible run on that.
Yes.
And how did you guys survive all the way through?
We survived all the way through. I'll even say, because Mardi Gras was a little later than usual this year, the carnival season was very long. So it did kind of just sort of taper off to eventually almost like normal life, but then parade started, so then it stopped being normal life again anyway.
Right.
It was very, very good to us, and we did not see any more full-on hysteria, which was great because we saw a lot of hysteria regarding King Cake.
That's incredible.
One can hardly believe it, but people are just nuts about King Cake, and you know, there's a lot of enthusiasts out there. I know I've seen several people, you know, people do King Cake parties and everyone brings a King Cake from somewhere different.
Right.
You know, I saw one guy bought like 70 King Cakes and made a spreadsheet and graded all of them.
Are you serious? Yes, oh wow. Okay, yes. I'm not surprised. I shouldn't be that shocked.
I think we got an A-, so I'll take that. Considering that it's not actually a King Cake.
In your first year doing
King
it, right?
Cake, yeah. So, all things considered, everything went great. I think we saw a taper instead of another spike for Mardi Gras, which is just fine. It's fine. Things are crazy enough already during Mardi Gras. You don't need more lines out the door and things like that.
Yeah, right. Now, we're kind of moving in, as we were talking about, too. People, if you don't know, after Mardi Gras ends, what that really means is that we're now moving into what we call festival season here in New Orleans.
Oh, yes.
And so no rest for the wicked, of course. We have French Quarter Fest is right around the corner, Jazz Fest in about a month and a half, give or take, a little bit more than that. But then we have all kinds of other interesting stuff. We have a Top Taco Festival coming up. We have the New Orleans Bourbon Festival coming up at the end of the month. Now, are you guys going to kind of, and as you said, a lot of people start kind of shifting into spring menus, both on the cocktail front and the food front.
Absolutely.
Will you guys anticipate doing the same thing here?
Oh, yes. We actually started doing some menu planning last week, you know, just putting together concepts. We're prepping up. Menu planning is always a really fun challenge with cocktails. I mean, one thing that I've been trying to do here is sort of have recurring house-made ingredients. Hmm. That kind of helps us to continue to be able to make the drinks we made last year. And it also sort of like, it helps us build a repertoire. So, you know, like we can have lime cordial and, you know, we can use that in a modern cocktail, but it'll also help us continue to make the same gimlets we've been making and continue to make those suffering bastards that we've been making and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I like to see recurring ingredients, it helps our menus to kind of always be accessible. We can always make the drinks we've always made.
Yeah. I think that's good bar management, right? I mean, as far as, you know, because you guys do, obviously it's a craft cocktail bar, but there has to be a sensibility of delivering drinks to people in a timely fashion, things that people can expect. Mm-hmm. And as you said, a repertoire, I think that's a great word.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I feel like I've seen, at Coquette, the bar manager there, I tried to iterate as quickly as they were iterating the food menu, which was constant. Mm-hmm. And one downside to that was that, you know, you know, we're using fresh local ingredients all the time, but when you have a cocktail based on fresh local ingredients and someone comes back 6 months later and wants that drink you made real bad, you just can't make it anymore.
Right.
One thing I saw working at 12 Mile was, you know, Cole tends to keep on his boat in and his great idea, and people just always know it's there, and I think people are really reassured by that. So I'm trying to split the difference a little bit by not necessarily always having something on the menu, but always being able to make something that was on the menu.
Right. Thanks, Jeff. So we're going to take a little break here and then come back. We're going to probably have you back on a little bit later on in the show.
Sure.
We're sitting here, friends, at Bakery Bar. We're down in the LGG, the lower Garden District here at 1179 Annunciation Street. Check them out. It's a great place. Friends, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show. We'll be right back.
French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranac's, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy. Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm walking to New Orleans. I'm gonna need to parachute.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Or if you're listening to the podcast, however you're hearing the NOLA Drink Show, I appreciate it. And we are back here in the lower Garden District, as we say, here at the Bakery Bar, recording our monthly visit and having a good time. As always, thanks to those guys for hosting. And I'm pleased to be joined by T. Cole Newton, who is the owner, proprietor, bar dude over there at 12 Mile Limit in Mid-City.
I like to describe my role at 12 Mile as owner, general manager, head bartender, and occasional handyman, bouncer, janitor, and exterminator.
And exterminator, okay.
As needed. We do have professionals for many of those services, but if it's late at night and there's an issue of that requires attention, all of that rolls uphill to me, basically.
That makes all the sense in the world. Actually, Cole, last time that we were there, my wife and I paid you a visit about a week and a half ago, and you guys were installing... No, you weren't, because you went with a professional, installing brand new shiny air hand dryers in the bathrooms.
Yeah, we're finally rocketing into the 80s with our hand drying technology. We've got electric hand dryers. They're eco-friendly.
Sweet.
Because we care about that kind of thing. Honestly, it was more a decision motivated by keeping our pipes clear of debris. That no matter how much you encourage people to use the appropriate receptacles for their paper towels, some of them will inevitably end up in the toilets and then in the pipes and then clogging the pipes. So we just removed that from the equation. Now there are no longer any paper towels in our bathrooms. Our pipes still block up, but slightly less often works for me.
I like it. I think it's one of those things where you get that sort of a triple bottom line thing, right? As they say in environmental economics, good for the environment, good for the bottom line, good for business.
It's, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, inevitably, especially because they're eco-friendly models, the hand dryers, like, we'll spend a lot less in electricity over the course of a year than we were spending on paper towels. So, and it's good to note that, as you say, the triple bottom line, that a lot of the times these moves towards greater efficiency, it's a win in every way. Like, we create this false dichotomy culturally that tends to make people believe that if you're going to go with an eco-friendly option, you're doing so at a cost to your own bottom line. Well, usually the opposite is true, because you're operating more efficiently as a result.
Exactly. Yeah. And that makes all the sense in the world. And I think, it's a great business practice. Now, perhaps not surprisingly to people listening to this show, you're thinking, I'm not surprised that they're talking about electric eco-friendly hand dryers here on the NOLA Drink Show. But actually, that's not what we're really meant to talk about. We just kind of go whichever way the wind blows here. But one of the things that's going on, Cole, that I know you've expressed some serious interest and some passion about, concern about as a bar owner, is a set of potential safety proposals presented by the city government, Mayor Landrieu, and then largely funded through Homeland Security grant. I think is where most of this money is coming from. And some of the things that are being talked about are installing more cameras around the city, external cameras. I think a couple of the ones that are of major concern, asking or requiring, I should say, bar owners to install, if they don't already have them, install interior security cameras that then feed to a central location that's monitored by the police or the government, in this case, not so much, not a private interest. And then also requiring bars to not close down per se and stop operation, not stop serving alcohol, but actually physically shut their doors at 3 a.m.
Yeah, those are the two proposals. First off, a point of clarification. My impression is that the mayor's proposal was not that we would have interior cameras that feed directly into the police department. That those would exclusively be exterior cameras that fed directly into the police department.
That was clarified then, because at the beginning it was not.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that is my impression.
Okay.
It's a bit difficult to find some of the details of this proposal, which is one of the reasons it's been so hard to they create an opposition that's based on fact and not just suppositions. That we want to be very careful that we're not creating an environment where we're railing against a thing that doesn't exist, where they've created this straw man and they're like, everyone's angry at this idea of what this proposal might be, but very few people actually have an idea of what it will look like when it's actualized. But I'm pretty sure the mayor's proposal is, like I said, it in terms of the 24-hour surveillance, that those are exterior-facing cameras. And I think it would have a much stronger pushback against interior cameras than exterior cameras. But
the exterior cameras are already out there in a lot of places anyway.
I think most bars that I'm aware of, we have four if you count the patio, which isn't really a public place in the space in the same way that they're trying to get. But we have three cameras, excluding the patio, that face outside. And then I think most bar owners have security cameras, and most bar owners have security cameras that have some outside presence. I think the problem for people isn't so much that in and of itself. It's the idea that 24 hours a day they would feed directly into a monitoring center.
Right.
That feels a bit big brothery. The right. idea that, oh, I'll just check and see what's going on. And we do have some outside seating on the sidewalk, and I think a lot of our regulars would be a little bit uncomfortable with the idea that they're being watched 24 hours a day. That no matter what... I can see the idea being that the city wants to create a network of cameras so it can track incidents. Because they're creating the hotspot camera system. But part of the proposal is that Bourbon Street and several other like high traffic, high crime areas will have exterior cameras that are built on like things that the city owns, like lampposts,
street lights,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that those would feed into a 24-hour surveillance area or surveillance center. But in addition to that, that the ones on bars would. It's sort of creating a citywide network of surveillance, and so they could track incidents and in real time, like see where people are going. And I get certainly the advantages of that from a crime-fighting standpoint, but it also seems, and I think kudos to Jason Williams for pointing this out, that this right now the city has been
city councilman.
Yeah, city councilman Jason Williams. That he observed that right now New Orleans is a sanctuary city, to use the parlance of our times,
right.
That we have not agreed to help the Department of, or ICE, the Immigration Enforcement, federally.
Immigration and Customs, yeah.
Yeah, that we've not agreed to have our local law enforcement aid in basically rounding up immigrants whose immigration status might be somewhat less than fully legal.
Right.
But the next... Like just because we have a mayor currently that's reluctant to do that, we may have a mayor next. You know, we don't know who our next mayor is going to be yet.
Right,
and they might be very much likelier to hand over a 24-hour surveillance to the federal government. And right now, with our federal government being so like there's so much about our current political landscape where like no, let's not create 24-hour surveillance of our citizenry.
Now, Cole,
there's a pushback before
we go
too visceral.
Absolutely, and those are all good points. I think before we go too much further down that road, I think there's a couple things to unpack with the cameras themselves and the central location thing. Now, your point where you can see perhaps the benefit. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the idea that potentially. If it's a hot pursuit, an immediate incident situation where you're tracking, as you said, stuff in real time, okay, that's one thing. But another part about this, too, is I don't know any bar owner, any restaurant owner, any business owner that if there's a particular incident that goes down in front of their business or inside their business, they will not willingly give the security footage to law enforcement.
Yeah, unless that business itself is actively trying to hide some other
of course,
activity.
Anyone
above board business.
And that's what warrants are for.
I can't imagine why a business would be reluctant to share that. We've had incidents at 12 Mile that required police involvement, and every time we have been more than happy to share any evidence that we've collected.
Exactly.
It's more about the 24-hour monitoring. Than about, everyone's willing to share that.
Absolutely. Cole, what we got to do here is we got to take a little break here.
Sure.
And we're going to come back and talk about this a little bit more. Friends, coming back here to the NOLA Drink Show. We're chatting with T. Cole Newton, owner of 12 Mile Limit. We're talking a bit about the security proposals, potential security proposals presented by, or proposed, I should say, by the city of New Orleans, and how this will affect bars in particular, and the service industry, which is something I want to talk about when we come back. Friends, come on back.
ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. And pleased to continue to chat here with T. Cole Newton, proprietor and man of many other talents there at 12 Mile Limit, a great bar there in Mid-City. And we're talking a little bit about the proposed safety measures, proposals here in New Orleans potentially affecting the bar industry. And let me qualify something here really quick, too. These are proposals. There's a lot of, which we don't necessarily need to speculate on where this goes or does not. There's nothing that says these things are going to even happen. There's a real lack of clarity on the specifics of these things. So that's kind of even why we're having this conversation, is trying to address some concerns about how these things may actually go down, if they go down as we understand them, and we don't understand them very well at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot that was left up to the city council. The mayor of New Orleans only has sort of limited authority in these areas, and he made a proposal that requires the city council to actually draft the legislation, debate the legislation, and then, if they so choose, enact the legislation that would make these policies a reality. And it's still unclear the degree to which there is the will to do so. There are certain aspects that the mayor can just enact with a wave of his hand, and there are others, the ABO changes specifically, the way that bars are regulated, which is what we're talking about today, that will require the city council. And we've yet to see what, if any, legislation is going to come out of these proposals from the city council.
Right. Now, one of the things that we were talking about, Cole, during the break here, and so we kind of touched on, we're trying to keep this somewhat straightforward for y'all listening, is that there are sort of two significant proposals or parts of the proposal that will probably have the greatest effect potentially on bars, the service industry, bar goers, patrons, so on and so forth. We discussed the security cameras a little bit before the break. The other one is requiring establishments to not shut down and not stop alcohol service, presumably, but physically close their doors at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And that seems a little hazy. I mean, does that mean that Go Cups stop at 3 a.m.? Throwing that out there.
That's not my impression, but honestly, I don't think that this is, I think this could easily be a move in that direction. I think a lot of people in the city government would love to see Go Cups go away entirely.
Yeah.
You know, that I think that walking around drinking culture is sort of what they're trying to target here to an extent. The 3 a.m. proposal, sort of as it came out from the mayor, would mean exactly what you said, that bars are required to close their doors at 3 a.m. but not close their businesses. And I think that would, I mean, most bars that aren't on major, in major going out sort of areas, your Bourbon Street, your Frenchman Street, they do that already. You know, that most bars don't have their doors propped open that late, if they are even open that late. My bar tends to be open until 2, later if it's busy, you know, but at least 2 most nights. But even, you know, after midnight, our door is closed. Mm-hmm. You know, people come up, they can come in if they want to, but I don't see exactly what this would do to help crime specifically. I think that's my biggest pushback against this one. You know, they're proposing it as a theoretically a crime prevention strategy, but most crimes occur well earlier in the evening and or at night. That 3 a.m. is actually one of the safest times to be outside a bar in New Orleans, according to some reporting from The Advocate.
Right. Now, and this seems to be sort of, I think, displacing the problem a little bit. And one part of this that is also that we should mention is this proposal to close the doors at 3 a.m. Is also, there was some language used that at that time, New Orleans police would, quote unquote, and I'll use their word, sweep the streets and sweep in front of the bars in these places. And there was really no detail given beyond that of what that actually means. But that seems to kind of strike me as something that you are maybe pushing people away, moving people to certain other parts of town. You're not going to sweep every particular neighborhood at 301.
Well, there's just not the manpower.
There's not the manpower for it. So what is it that you're actually looking to do? And what does a sweep mean? What does it involve? Who are you looking for? And where are you? And I think that that can create a situation of great bias towards particular neighborhoods and particular peoples.
I think, yeah, that sort of quality of life laws generally, whether they be about public intoxication or noise ordinances, they tend to be, especially when they're so vague and nebulous. And I think there's room for there to be more specificity there that I think would either make people angrier or less angry, depending on what the specifics were. But the vague call for sweeps and for the police to encourage people to go inside or disperse from outside of bars at 3 a.m., what does that mean? What does the police encourage? Like, if it's not illegal to be outside and the police come by and suggest that you move along, what is your recourse as a citizen there? That's so nebulous that it's kind of frightening. And also, as you say, that these quality of life concerns are often been selectively enforced, usually against populations that are already marginalized. Right. So poor people of color. Historically, I assume there'll be less and less of this because it's but against gay and lesbian populations. So that the Stonewall type incidents, yeah. And there have been similar incidents in New Orleans. There was a gay bar in the 70s that burned to the ground. Many people were trapped inside, and there was, you know, the police and fire department's response was insufficient. We'll put it that way. Right. So those are the kinds of populations that I worry on their behalf. I'm not a representative of those populations, so I don't want to, you know. But in many cases,
these are patrons. These are people that are working in the service industry, for example, in many instances. That I think this is something that also potentially affects the culture of the service industry. That concern has been expressed to me that you have a lot of people. Look, New Orleans runs on tourism. And that means that New Orleans depends on the service industry for a considerable part of its economy. And a lot of these people are working the hours that we're talking about through the evening, through the early morning, just after midnight. This is the time that they get off. And this is, quote unquote, their afternoon or evening at maybe 3 a.m. when they go to the Saint or something like that. Sure. To go have drinks and be with their peers. And what does that mean to those people as well? And some of these populations that we're talking about are those people.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of people in the service industry that are also poor people, that are people of color, that are likely, I mean, I don't say likely, because I think that's sort of assuming the worst when we have very little to go on, that these things aren't happening yet, so we shouldn't necessarily assume that they're going to go wrong. But that, yeah, the NOPD historically does not have an excellent civil rights record.
Right.
And I don't know that that has changed sufficiently to allay people's fears of that kind of selective enforcement.
Well, let's talk about this, Cole, because we got about 2.5 minutes left or so. We were talking a little bit about maybe some better ways to emphasize the funding, the funding might be tied in certain ways that we're not privy to what Homeland Security is willing to get money for. But in theory, if this money was available to be used in other ways, or even just how we reprioritize things over cameras and police sweeps at 3 a.m., maybe some things like boots on the ground, walking the beat. You mentioned several things.
Yeah, I think if this money is not earmarked in specific ways, and based on the kinds of things they're trying to do with it, I doubt that it is, then I think there are other ways that you can address the systemic roots of crime in an urban area that will be more effective long term. And these are the less sexy things, but like building up our public education system so that people can get the education they need to get a decent job. That maybe that'll help prevent crime long term. Or putting some sort of mental health services in the jail, or creating a separate detention center or holding area for people who need, for people who don't have access to mental health services, but that is the reason that they commit certain types of crime, instead of just dumping them in with the general population at the jail like we do. And creating economic opportunities, improving education, there's a lot of things that you could do. And like you said, putting like community policing practices. They're more expensive to implement, but they actually seem to have a greater impact in reducing crime in communities and building that trust in the short communities.
In the short term,
they reduce crime. And in the long term, they build a relationship between the government, between the police specifically, and the community, that just having giving people more cars doesn't. That people driving around in police cars in a community has a very, very different effect than people walking.
Absolutely. And I think that to me is one of the great ways to maybe go about this, is more, you know, boots on the ground, walking the beat is a proven method to, as you said, build relationships with your neighborhood. You know people. Mm-hmm. And you know, and knowing the actors on any side of the aisle, knowing the actors is a huge part in preventing crime. Well, Cole, do me a quick favor here, because we've got about 30 seconds left. Tell people where 12 Mile Limit is and how they can come find you.
12 Mile Limit is at 500 South Telemachus in Mid-City. We are between Banks and Tulane on Telemachus. Telemachus and Bowdoin. If you know where Finn McCool's Irish Pub is, we are a block towards Tulane from there.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Cole. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having
me, Brian. Yeah, man, we'll do it again soon, and we'll talk about something maybe a little bit, I don't want to say more fun, but we'll talk about something a little less serious next
time.
Friends, thank you. Friends, come on back here to the NOLA Drink Show.
Shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful, fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose, Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey.
Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We are here at Bakery Bar doing the do here as we usually do once a month. And I'm pleased to be joined by, starting furthest from me, Steve Yamada.
Hey, Brian, it's great to be back. Thanks.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Adrian Miller.
Hi.
Hi, Adrian. And Conrad Cantor.
Hello, Brian.
Hi. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
That's great. It's really a pleasure to have. It's nice to have all. I have actually never sat in the same space as all three of you at one time. I've sat with different permutations, but all three of you in the same space at one time is awesome.
Did you ever suspect?
For all of us.
Did you ever suspect that maybe we're the same person?
Yeah, amazingly, that would be some of the most incredible mask work. We have a Japanese American, we have a half African Mexican American, and a white guy. So that would be some of the most amazing special effects that I have ever seen. Yeah, right.
Thank you very much.
I'm the only one that pretty much shaves their facial hair, so I cannot look as handsome as these dudes normally do.
Now you got that sweet tank top on. You're rolling. You look good.
My side boob isn't out, so it's not that good.
It's not, Adrian, it's not summertime at Bartonique. It's still a little bit in the winter, and that changes that conversation a little bit, I think. So thanks for joining me today, you three, here on the show. And as we always do here on the NOLA Drink Show, we plan everything out to a T. So what are we talking about? We're talking about you guys have all bartended in the French Quarter quite a bit. Conrad, you are in the French Quarter at Cane and Table right now. I know, Steve, you were at, so you're at Bubba Gump's. I know you were at Latitude 29.
Yeah, Revolution as well. And then,
oh, I didn't know that.
I worked a lot of small gigs throughout the years, you know, Daiquiri Shops on Bourbon Street. Like, I spent most of my career in the French Quarter.
I didn't know. So did you start at a daiquiri shop first off, or where, or Bubba Gump's?
First place I worked was actually Uptown. It was at the Elms Mansion. I was 18 years old. I just needed some side money. I lied about my age, and I got this catering bartending job, which I didn't know anything about, but it's not the hardest thing to pick up in the world. So I think I had that job for about a year while I was working on dropping out of college, and then I ended up in the French Quarter at the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, which I was at for 7 years.
Yeah, that's right. You were there for a while. And then from there, did you go to Latitude? Or
No. It was a long journey from that.
You've been around the block then, man, is what you're saying.
Okay. It's been a while. But when I was working for Bubba Gump's, it was a really great educational opportunity for me. I learned how to, they put me in a management track there. So I learned a lot about back-of-house operations and also, like, just back-of-house operations, learning about Excel spreadsheets and how to run systems, reading P&Ls. I mean, it was the best free education I can have. Anybody who pays money to go to, like, a restaurant or hospitality, like, school, just go work at a chain restaurant. They'll teach you all that stuff in 6 months.
That is the most exciting response to P&Ls and Excel spreadsheets I have ever heard in my entire life.
I like numbers. I can't help it sometimes.
Well,
but
go ahead.
While I was working with Bubba Gump's, I actually became a bit of a corporate trainer for them, and I helped them open up stores throughout the country. I think I ended up opening up 4 stores, and then they moved me to Chicago for half the year, and I was managing a restaurant that they had on the Navy Pier. And that's how I ended up, like, splitting my time between here and Chicago. And that's how I stopped liking Bubba Gump's and decided, actually, Chicago was kind of my gateway for a while into the craft cocktail scene, because I remember it was the first time when I was up there, somebody took me to the Violet Hour, and I was just like, I always brag about how great of a bartender I thought I was. Like, it's like, oh, I think I'm a really great bartender. And then somebody took me to this place called the Violet Hour, and then the Whistler and all these other bars. It's like, oh my gosh, I suck as a bartender.
Well, so Adrian, now you, tell us a little bit about your background. We're friends going back to the early days at Bartonique, but how did you find yourself there?
I worked at Hustler when I first moved to the city. I forgot about that, which was hilarious. I was in Mobile traveling back and forth, and I ended up, one of the girls that was working for us at the nightclub I opened in Mobile, she was like, yeah, they are hiring there. So I drove in, and one of the managers was like, oh, you have some personality. I really like that about you. And I was like, cool, thanks. And I started bartending behind the club, the strip club, behind the bar, the strip club. I can't talk. And that was fun.
Is that the front room bar? Don't they have a back bar in there or something?
So when you walk into Hustler, it's straight out the bar. They just have a flat out bar. It's not like Rick's.
Okay.
And then they have a VIP bar upstairs. So during Mardi Gras, that's when I got, like, the most action, and they actually started letting me work at night. It was after Mardi Gras, and I was like, this is so much fun. Like, I had a great time. working, I highly would suggest working at a strip club. It can be emotionally draining sometimes because of the things that you see. But at the end of the day, it is a lot of fun. And I learned a lot of things about myself and a lot of things about women who dance and the emotional toll that it can take on them. And those women are so strong. And it's really a beautiful thing just to sit there and to see a woman dominate a room and command respect. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's beautiful. It's amazing. And
do you think people miss that there's a true, I mean, there's an art form in this that I think people miss.
It's very true. Those, some of those girls take dance classes and run dance schools, and it's beautiful to sit up there. I learned a lot. I learned a lot of movement, actually, too, and some of the things that I do now from the dancers, just from the moves that they did. It's amazing. And from there, I got fired.
What'd you do?
I can't count, apparently. Okay. Which is true, because my drawer was,
don't incriminate yourself.
I'm not. My drawer was either always over or short, and they, like you can't mess with money. And me, also, like, I bartended and used to, like, help run a casino bar, so I know very much, like, very aware about, like, how money corporations like that run, so I could understand why I got fired. And then that's where I met Schmark Schmettler.
That guy.
Mark that Keller, dummy.
Yeah.
And then he gave me a job at Apolline, and then we both ended up applying at Tonic, and we both got hired at Tonic. And then I got to work on the lovely Rampart Street, which is probably one of the best streets in New Orleans, because the family that we have and all the bars on that street are very much in tune with each other. And they're very, if anybody needs anything, we work next to Grand Prix. You don't understand how many times Grand Prix has, like, saved Tonic's butt because we've run out of something, and I've ran over there and be like, can you guys help us out? Mm-hmm. And they've gladly given it to us. Really great friends with all the people at Mobar. Yep. You know,
that street's changing for the better in a lot of ways. I mean, as far as more businesses opening up there, the streetcar has been a great thing for the street.
I have my thoughts about the streetcar, but whatever.
That's a topic for another show. Okay, never mind.
But yeah, I love working in the quarter. I love working on Rampart, period. It's not a dull day on Rampart ever. And I love the sense of community that entire street has, that we all watch out for each other and that we all care about each other. And it's just, it's a great place to be. I love it.
Cool. Thank you. And we'll come back to some more stuff. Conrad, since you're sitting here patiently with your basketball shorts on.
I love my segue. Like, you don't realize how connected you are to people. Even indirectly, like when I listen to Steve and Adrian tell their stories, it's like Steve and I didn't know each other but started at Tulane the same year. He was in the honors dorm, like a nerd. But, you know,
he plays board games.
We play board games together, but he is a lot better at understanding the board games. and then, you know, Adrian and I became very fast friends because our personalities just kind of. We're just, I don't know how.
I have never heard two people call each other dummy so lovingly in my life.
We both hate each other, and that's the beauty of our relationship.
That's a lie. You're probably like one of the few people I truly, truly love.
I love Adrian.
Where I'm like, that dude, I'd stab somebody for him.
but it was my work history in the French Quarter actually started when I was 14 years old. I was I would come to New Orleans every summer to live with my great uncle, I learned how to paint and do renovation at a very young age. And I was pretty much on my own. I would make cash, and I would make $40. You know, I'd make $10 an hour, which was generous. I would go spend it on Fiorella's, which back then it was owned by the original family.
The original Fiorella's.
The original was in the quarter back then. Yeah. And I would eat a shrimp po' boy and a house salad with French dressing, like clockwork. And then I would have four more hours of work. And then I would usually waste my money on incense at the French market.
Sweet.
But, you know, watching the French Quarter develop from you know, the mid to late 90s as a young teenager was interesting, and did not necessarily see myself...
finish the thought. Go
ahead. Bartending, you know.
Well, let's do this. So then you said bartending. Let's hold the thought, you guys. Let's come back. You guys stick around for another segment. All right, we got to take a little commercial break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We are chatting with Conrad, Adrian, and Steve. Come on back.
Shame on you, Miss Roxanne. Shame, shame, shame on Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. We are continuing our conversation, again, in reverse order. Steve Yamada, Adrian Miller, and Conrad Cantor. When I say reverse order, from how far someone is sitting from me. But we left off with Conrad. And Conrad was just talking about how he used to day labor for $40 and go crush chicken at the original Fiorella's on Decatur. And then somehow you became a bartender, man. How did that
still
happen?
Still there. Well, so after Katrina, I started bartending in back home. And it was a giant, high-volume place owned by the current mayor of Palm Beach called E.R. Bradley's. And they had 6 bars, and it was just massive, you know, bad drinks for speed bartending. Eventually, I would come back to New Orleans, and I opened Sobu alongside Abigail. When I say alongside, she was the leader, and she was my mentor. And brought me on behind the bar. I think we started nerding out on gin, and she was kind of just like, I like this dude. But Steve was consequently opening Revolution at the same time that I was a part of the Sobu opening crew. And I did that for, that's kind of how I got into cocktails. And then from there, I went to open and manage the bar at Doris Metropolitan. So 3 blocks away, essentially. And then I went another 2 blocks to open El Libre as a managing partner, and then I went another 3 blocks to work at Cannon Table. So I haven't really...
You haven't made it to Frenchman Street
yet. I haven't made it to Frenchman Street yet.
It's crazy with this entire time. So me and Conrad, we were in college together, and then, you know, we worked within blocks from each other for like a year or two or something like that. And like, we were just talking about like when we officially met, and that wasn't until like years later.
Like 2013.
Yeah, 2013, like, you know, at a cocktail competition that I was helping to organize. And it's weird how this industry can work that way. It's like,
Right. I mean, especially the town too. The town is like 1 degree of separation, but then there are people that you don't know that you should. It's almost mathematically impossible that you didn't know them. Adrian, I'm sorry.
It's funny, too. I have a funny story about how I met Conrad. He used to come into the bar.
And this is where?
At Tonique.
Okay.
And he would sit on the corner, and he would talk mess about people. And I would just sit there and giggle. And that actually made me, like, develop a crush on him. And the day that I was going to ask Conrad out, I found out he had started a relationship with the girl that I was working with, and I was like, oh, just kidding. High five, you're awesome. And then me and him became really good friends, and like, actually we met at Bombay Sapphire, and then I was like, this dude's hilarious. And
I met you guys the same, yeah, Bombay Sapphire.
Yeah,
then is,
that's, well,
because that's where Steve and I, we talked on the phone.
Yeah.
And we may have shaken hands, but that's where I met Steve, and he was one of the judges.
Yeah, and Adrian was living with me at the time. Hey,
what was the Bombay, was that a competition then?
They do a most imaginative cocktail competition every year, and it's always a a blast, especially if you
we can't go too epistemic and go down the nerd hole of bartender conversation where we met at Bombay Sapphire and it sounds like, is this some sort of exotic bar in Calcutta? No. So.
But it's funny how close our lives were, and it just took that one kind of catalyst to bring us together, and we've been, all three of us have been friends ever since. But it was, you know, I always loved going to Tonique, and when she said I would talk mess about people, it was generally about the type of people that ask if there's gluten in a specific type of vodka.
Tito's. Yeah. Tito's bonded us together forever.
Never.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. That comment. Okay, that comment. And not what you said, Adrian, but okay,
whiskey
gluten and
makes
vodka.
Me itchy, Conrad.
I just wanted to make Adrian laugh. That's why I went there, to entertain her.
Well, and Adrian, let me ask you this question. Then we're going back out this direction. So when you went from working at the Hustler Club, I'm assuming you're doing a lot of like slinging beers, slinging rum and cokes and that kind of thing. And then when you went to work at Appoline, then that's sort of when you started getting to the craft cocktail thing?
No. Actually, I've been making cocktails, and I say that very loosely because whatever. Yeah. I've been doing this when I lived in New Mexico. I actually learned how to bartend there and moved to Denver and worked at Coyote Ugly, which was a lot of fun.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. All right. And then was part of the opening team of Acorn in Denver, and working for Brian Dayton, which I learned a lot in the month that I was there, and then had some things happen and I moved back to Mobile. So I've been making cocktails, I think, since 2005, 2006.
I didn't know that you went back that long in other locations. Okay.
But I actually learned and got in depth when I moved to New Orleans and got in Tonique and other things too. But I have a really weird palate, and I went to culinary school, so that's why I understand flavors a lot.
You're one of my favorite sharers on Facebook of recipes, by the way.
I love food. I really, if you ever go out to eat with me, and Conrad knows this, because we did this like a few months ago, I literally will eat 12 plates. I'm not kidding you.
We went to Vincent's and ate.
We crushed it.
I mean, to eat the menu at Vincent's is obviously far-fetched because the menu is so big, but we ate enough food for a couple days for me.
Well, and, yeah. You know, Adrian, you probably remember how you and I became friends was in Tonique, and being the native Californian that I am, we bonded over griping about Mexican food in the area.
Yes, because you know how in touch with my Mexican side I am, and like the Mexicanist. Even Steve knows, because I've made him food before.
This girl makes it. It's absolutely amazing. I remember at one point we were living together in Mid-City, and she came back from Rouse's because she heard that somebody there was like had like green chilies, and she came back with like two boxes full of just like green chilies. I was like, what is this? Like, is that completely ignorant towards like Mexican food and everything like that? But just shut up. I'm gonna make you food. And she doesn't cook like a little bit of food. Like, her idea of cooking for you is like, here is a sheet pan full of food, this is your portion, and like, here's my portion and my brother's portion, and like, all right, now we're gonna eat. Let's eat now.
No,
it's awesome. It's the nicest, most soulful and enriching thing you can possibly have, is just having like awesome food just like forced upon you. It's amazing.
Can I come over, Adrian? You've never invited me over. We've only just talked about it.
Well, one day me and Conrad are going to have a rib tip cook-off so I can beat him and finally tell him to shut up.
She doesn't know how much barbecue I grew up eating.
He doesn't know the skills that I have, but whatever.
Can I be a judge?
Oh, I know. Your skills are awesome. I'm not even trying to take away from
I want to be a judge, skills. If only because I want to taste the rib tips. It has no other motivation.
I'll second that. Two impartial judges right here, guys.
Steve, I think we already have a judging. See, it comes full circle. I meet Steve as my judge in Bombay Sapphire. Now he's going to be judging Adrian and I in a rib tip cook-off.
I've just been judging you guys for years.
I like it. I like it, Steve. And I'll get judgmental with you. You and I will do this, man. Perfect. Well, so Steve, do me a favor. We got about a minute or so left. Tell people where they can find you right now.
Oh, right on. I'm at 12 Mile Limit Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and whatever shifts I can pick up. That's at 500 South Telemachus up in Mid-City. Great neighborhood spot. We do cocktails. We've got beers. We've got good times.
Awesome. Cool. And Adrian, you're at Tonique, but you're also at Toops. And both Tubes.
Well, I guess this is going to be the appropriate time. I will no longer be at Tonique.
Oh, okay.
The first week in May is my last week. It's going to be a lot of sadness, but it's time to move on. I'm actually running the bars at Tubes Meadery and Tubes South. You can catch me there I don't know when. I'm always
there. You're always at one of the two. How do we know which one you're at, though?
Either message me or you have my number. You can. Yep. I'm always at South, Tube South on Mondays. Monday during the day, Saturday night, and then starting probably the week after next, I will be at the Meadery, Tubes Meadery, Tuesday night and Friday night. Yeah, in Carrollton.
Cool. And I won't put your number out on the radio, by the way. Yes, I have your number.
I know you do.
But I'm not going to.
But come. No, we have, like, Tubes South on O.C. Haley is amazing. One of my favorite things on the menu is the Deckel Steak. It's so good.
Ooh, okay.
And the corn dogs during happy hour will blow your mind.
I got to get there. I've only been to the Meadery.
I've got to interject real quick. If you don't get the pork chop sack at Tube South, you are clearly
doing
it wrong.
I've seen photos.
You
are
doing it wrong.
The knife through like three pork chops. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not for sharing either. Just
Conrad, where do we find you, buddy?
I am at Canaan Table on Wednesdays and weekends. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much...
Does that mean Sundays too? Friday, Saturday
night.
Friday,
Saturday,
right?
Sunday. And it's every third week I'll do a brunch thing just because we all rotate because none of us really like to work brunch. But
fair enough.
And also, if you want to catch me, I write for a metal website, yourlastrights.com. Music and our industry kind of are inevitably tied together because we're always playing music for people. Not a lot of metal at Canaan Table. But if you want the latest and greatest as far as learning about new metal albums that are coming out, yourlastrights.com.
Cool. Thanks, guys. And actually, as I said, Adrian is my favorite poster of recipes on Facebook. You are my favorite poster of metal bands that I have never heard of on Facebook. Friends, thanks for joining the Noel Drink Show here. We're going to be right back with a little bit more. Come on back.
This is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po'boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger, 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. We're wrapping up our stint here at Bakery Bar, as we do once a month. And I am pleased to be joined by two new friends and one old friend, Shannon McSwain, one of my new friends. Welcome.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And one of my old friends, Katie Dubois.
Hi, thanks for having us, Brian.
As always, Katie. And another one of my new friends, Ashton Berry.
Hello.
Hi, Ashton. Thanks for joining us today. So you guys had a meeting. So it was a U.S. Bartenders Guild New Orleans chapter meeting today, right? Was that what was going on? What was the meeting? Or were you all just kind of getting together and talking?
I think it was just a convening of the minds.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
And a little think tank brain work.
Awesome. Okay, and that makes a lot of sense. And actually, I know it's been a heavy day week and a half maybe, in the service community here in New Orleans. And we're going to do a future show with Ashton on this, talking about race issues in the service industry in New Orleans. You've probably seen the controversy online. Don't really want to talk about that today because we're going to do a show on this. So we decided, hey, at this point during the day, after you all kibbutz like you did, let's just talk about drinks. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
Perfect.
Great. Well, Ashton, why don't we start with you? You work at the Ace Hotel.
I do. I work at the Ace Hotel. I manage the lobby and rooftop bar named Alto.
Yeah, and that's a great view up there. That's a cool space.
We like it.
I like it, too. That's
we
cool.
We like it.
Ashton, what? Tell me a little bit about your background. How'd you get into bar? I assume you started as a bartender, and then
got into this community through being a sommelier and in the wine world.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, I was just enamored after I lived in Paris with just food and beverage and wine. And I came back and I finished college and had a corporate job that made me miserable. And so I quit and started working in a wine shop.
Nice. Which wine, a wine shop? Wine shop here in town?
No, a wine shop in Chicago.
In Chicago. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And that kind of just started this journey. And I was really fortunate. I got to travel with them to vineyards. And then I kind of that way got into the industry. And then
Gotcha.
It's a weird thing. I was like cocktailing at a sports bar, but working at a wine bar.
That sounds cool. when did you move to New Orleans?
I moved to New Orleans a little over a year ago. It was actually my year anniversary back in like the beginning of February and January.
So this sort of explains why we're new friends, because you haven't been here for too long.
I haven't been here for too long, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, Katie, you and I have been friends for a little while now.
Yes, we have.
And you are at Cane and Table.
No.
I mean, not Cane and Table, excuse me, Barrel Proof. Jeez,
yeah,
I know
that. Yeah, the whiskey version of Cane and Table.
Yes, right. And, which is amazing, because right after I leave this place, I'm actually coming to see you at Barrel Proof. So I promise you
I won't be there.
Okay. I'm sorry. No, I get the name wrong. You should say go to Cane and Table, and I won't run into you there either. So and tell us a little bit about yourself then. You are at Barrel Proof.
I am at Barrel Proof, yes.
And you've been at Barrel Proof pretty much since they opened, right? You started a little bit afterwards.
I've been there for, actually, my 2-year anniversary was last week.
Congratulations.
Yay.
Did you get? Did Liam give you a pin or a gold watch or anything like that?
No, he tried to pour me a shot of whiskey, but I'm not drinking currently, and he got more upset than I did. But he gave me a shot of cranberry juice, so we're good.
That sounds like Liam. Yeah, happy anniversary. Awesome. Yes. And before you were at Barrel Proof, where were you?
I actually worked very briefly. I worked at Pesh, but before that, I lived in Boston, and that's where I spent most of the last 8 years in the industry.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that we're also going to do a future show on the 23rd is you are very involved in restoration of the Gulf Coast here in Louisiana.
Correct.
And so on the 23rd, we're going to do a show with you. And is Noelle coming on the show? Noelle Wilcox?
She has not confirmed nor denied.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And then Sam Perez.
Yes.
Also our friend Sam there at Catahoula. And we're going to talk about your efforts in an upcoming event to fundraise for Gulf Coast Restoration Network.
Yeah, which is really cool. And the Gulf Restoration Network has been an absolutely amazing resource and a phenomenal organization to work with.
Yeah,
they're
really
just
fun.
Really great people, and I really stand for what they believe in.
And you've had the good fortune of taking field trips down to the Gulf Coast and stopping at bars on the way back and the way down, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's part of the cultural exchange.
It's also the easiest way to get any sort of knowledge firsthand. Is we all know the bar is the best way to talk to people, and that's how people get to know each other and how they build their communities, and using just a conversation over a couple beers. So we've stopped at a couple bars here and there just to kind of get the locals' perspective on what's changing for them and what's changing their economy based off of what's actually happening to the land itself and what their livelihood is going forward.
Awesome. So that we'll do that on the 23rd. That'll be really fun to this month. And Shannon, my new friend. So Shannon, you were just telling me a little bit about what you do. You're doing a cocktail catering company with our friend Jesse Goodwin.
Yes, it's an events production company. We like to work with locals to create kind of customized events. There's so many people who have parties here that tend to be a little bit simplified. And I've heard a lot of people in the past talking about how they're throwing these extravagant parties and they don't have custom cocktails. All they have is beer and wine and, you know, vodka sodas. And those are certainly a lot of fun. But yeah, we like to just kind of create a very specific event for our clients and show them as good of a time as we can in our bars.
And it's called Portois, correct?
Portois, yes.
Great. And so, what else are you up to? You said you're working for USBG.
Yes, I am a neighborhood representative for the Bartenders Guild. I have 1,000 jobs.
Very nice. Death by 1,000 jobs.
That's an exaggeration.
Yeah. Okay.
I also work at Three Muses Maple with Kim Patton Bragg, which is incredible.
And what are you doing there? Are you behind the bar there?
I am bartending there. Okay. Yes. I'm trying to have as little responsibility as possible in everything outside of my business right now. So,
very nice.
Yeah.
And
it's
how's it going with Portois? Are you guys starting to? It's pretty new. It's a pretty new venture, right?
It is
right? Quite
new. Yeah. We're still in sort of beginning stages. Where, you know, we're working on a lot of the legal side of things, which takes some time, and fundraising and all that. Stuff nobody wants to hear about, of course.
Sure. That's right. We're supposed to talk about drinks. It doesn't really matter. That's all right. No, that's cool. It's exciting, though, what you're doing. I think it's kind of a new concept in general.
It's been done other places, I realize, but it's a fairly untapped market here, and it's something that it seems as though a lot of people are really interested in finding and having, and I've had a lot of interest from bartenders in working with us, and it's worked out well. Jesse and I are both... We both suffer from injuries that don't allow us to work full-time behind bars anymore.
Right.
So we're trying to make some opportunities to get out of that setting and get off our feet and kind of be in the background a little more and give some other people opportunities that they haven't necessarily gotten so far.
And share your knowledge, though, and your experience.
Yep.
And all that's exciting. Cool. Well, Katie, Barrel Proof is a bar that has a lot of, I guess, whiskey is kind of the central point.
Yep,
you can do
for sure.
You guys can make a Sazerac in there. You can make anything in there that you want.
Correct.
But and I mean, of course, Sazerac whiskey. That was a stupid thing to say. But you can make anything that you want in there. But you're one of the things that always impresses me about you is your knowledge of whiskey is exceptional.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
It's
absolutely
true. I'll vouch for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and
Shannon's is pretty good too.
Yeah. Cool. We did a show a while back with you, and we were talking about gender issues behind the bar. And one of the things that we talked about was when people come in, especially I think to a whiskey bar, and maybe think, oh, there's a female behind the bar. What can she possibly know about whiskey? And you always just blow me away. And what do you guys? You guys have like 200 whiskeys? Is
it's,
that right?
About 270.
It's up to 270,
give or take. Okay, basically, because well, right. We don't really keep a backstock, so it's if it's there, we add it. If we try to build to it, but
yeah, and I mean your depth of knowledge and all this is really incredible, and it's really impressive. Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, and so and you're not working. I'm going over there now. And you're
I am
not
working this evening, but so I did go there earlier to taste whiskey, so I can. The brain's still there.
Who's going
to
be there that I have to actually deal with?
Now? It's going to be John.
Oh, it's going to be John
so
and Eric. Okay,
good
I'm good.
Oh,
all right, with Eric. That's
you
good.
Have you have Melina. Right. You're fine.
All right, that's perfect. Now, Ashton, so your background then, which I've just learned now on the air, is in wine. Where did you do your SOM stuff in Chicago?
Yeah, I did. So I did the Wine and Spirit Education Trust, which on the journey for Masters of Wines, which I have 1, 2, and 3 of, and which I actually crossed my fingers, guys. I'm going to take level 4 this
Sweet.
Year.
Sweet. Congratulations. I mean, that's
if
that's
I can
a hard
actually,
one.
I can
one.
Actually find the time to study. Yeah, yeah. I paid for it. The hope is that I
Oh, and
pass.
You've already paid for it, too. Okay, so you're on the hook. That is a tough one. That was not for the faint of the heart.
Yeah.
When is the test, Ashton?
The test is not until this fall, late fall. It's in November.
You
early
have to
November.
Travel for that one, right?
Yeah.
That one's not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going?
Chicago.
Okay, cool. So
it'll be the first time I've actually ever tested in Chicago.
So kind of home turf, a little bit of home cooking, right? So that'll always good to have a home crowd advantage.
Yeah.
Too bad you can't have people come in and like cheer for you and do the home court advantage.
Oh, my gosh, that
thing.
Would make it worse. One of the reasons why, like now, that would make it worse. I always used to test purposely outside of Chicago. Because then that way I didn't know anybody in the room and that made it easier for me. And so now I was like, oh, I wonder if I can change it. Maybe it's not a good idea for me.
don't tell anybody that you're coming to town. Well, Ashton, do me a favor. We got just a little bit of time left here. Tell people where they can find you at the Ace Hotel. Where it is and like online and all
that
stuff.
Okay, I was like, well, all over. my outlets are 9 floors apart, so in the elevator most times. But 600 Carondelet is where we're located. You'll see Stumptown right next door to us, which I think a lot of people know where that is.
Yep. In the Central Business District. It's
in the CBD. The lobby bar is just that first bar to your right, like where you see it. And the lobby bar is a really beautiful place. It's so cool because you have the living room, which you walk into where you can do studying, have meetings during the day. But at night, it's a totally different vibe. It's a music venue. And we are actually hosting Boiler Room, which has never been in New Orleans before.
Cool, yeah.
For the next 2 days. It started last night, and we're hosting for the next 2 days, and it's really cool. And they're featuring a lot of local NOLA artists as well. So it's pretty neat.
Awesome. And is it AceHotelNola.com?
Mm-hmm. Ace Hotel NOLA.
Yeah.
Awesome. But you can put Ace Hotel New Orleans. We own both domains, and it'll come up.
Cool.
As well.
Awesome. Thanks, Ashton. I appreciate it. Katie, where do we find you? At Barrel Proof. Not Cane and Table.
Just Barrel Proof. I'm at Barrel Proof, which is 1201 Magazine Street. We open every day at 4. Weekdays close at 1. Open till 2 on the weekends. Don't really recommend testing the waters at 11:30 on a Saturday. But
I
will be there.
At 4 o'clock.
You come at 4 o'clock. Yes, come when we're open. Happy hour is great because old fashions are $3.75.
Yes, they are.
But I'm there Thursday through Sunday.
Awesome. Thank you, Katie. And Shannon, so we tell us where we find Portois online, which I assume that's the best way to go about it, right?
Yes, you can find us at portoisevents.com or email me at inquiries@portoisevents.com if you have any questions or want to look into booking.
Awesome. And then tell people where the Uptown Three Muses is on Maple.
I'm not as good as these ladies at actually having the exact address, but I'll tell you.
It's on Maple Street, Uptown.
It's on the corner of Maple and Hillary, Uptown, in that kind of new up-and-coming area of Maple that's
there's a lot of
slowly
cool stuff
blossoming.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
It's
absolutely
a real diverse little neighborhood now.
Cool.
And then at the Company Burger downtown as well.
Awesome. Shannon, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for being on. Shannon, Katie, Ashton, I really appreciate
Thanks, Brian.
It. Awesome.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah,
Brian.
My pleasure. Have a good evening. Friends, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to wrap things up. Come on back.
Are
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Thanks for tuning in today here on the radio on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you, or if you're listening to the podcast, thank you very much. Special thanks to our friends there, Jeff Schwartz and the gang at Bakery Bar, located at 1179 Annunciation, for allowing us to do our monthly show taping there. A lot of fun. We're going to be back there, I believe it's Tuesday, April 4th, doing it again. So, hey, if you're in the business, service industry, that sort of thing, and you want to stop by, I got something to say, stop by. We might put you on the radio. If you're interested in learning about Bakery Bar and Debbie Does Dobage, you can go to bakery.bar. Yep, that's a domain these days, .bar, bakery.bar. Find out about them there on Facebook, of course, and all that good stuff. Couple events, too, folks, I didn't get to at the top of the show that I briefly wanted to mention. Coming up this Saturday up at Pontchartrain Vineyards there in Bush, just north of Covington. It's about an hour north of the CBD where we are and the French Quarter, about exactly an hour. They're doing their quarterly wine club release party. You don't have to be in the club to go. It's free for all to attend. It goes from 12 to 3. There's live music from Eric DeSanto, from 12:30 to 3, I believe it is, and then a food pairing for wine club members from 12 to 2 at the release of the new wines. It's a lot of fun. If you head out there, you can actually sign up for the wine club when you're out there. So again, that's Pontchartrain Vineyards, and they're up there in Bush. Just check them out, pontchartrainvineyards.com. Also, our friends over there at SOFAB, the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, they do some pretty cool programming there, friends. They're located at 1504 Aretha Castle Haley here in New Orleans, and they do these really cool cooking. They're a lunch and cooking demonstration classes on Thursdays, and they've changed it up here for the spring. And what they're doing is they're doing two iterations on Cajun and Creole cooking. Every other Thursday, what they're doing is they're doing Cajun cuisine, and you get a three-course meal. It's $50 a person. Goes from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So you get this demonstration. You learn how to cook the recipes. You get the recipes. You get to bring them home. And then they also give you some tips to make it a little bit easier to deliver some of this food, make some of this food as a home cook. But the Cajun cuisine, every other Thursday is Cajun cuisine, as I mentioned. And that menu features mock chew with tasso, Cajun gumbo with dark roux, andouille and chicken. And that's served with Louisiana long grain rice and excuse me. And then there's also dessert, iced tea with lemons and things. I think this also might include a tour. The opposite Thursdays are Creole Italian, and that is, let's see, Italian salad with fresh lemon, Creole red gravy, as we say, made with a roux in this case, with sweet Italian sausage and pasta. There's garlic bread. Again, I think there's a dessert in that one. You can check that out. And then on Mondays from 11 to 1, they do a Creole lunch, salad, vine, ripened tomatoes with hard-boiled eggs, scallions, and Creole remoulade sauce, and some other stuff. But go check that out. It's neat. Sounds like a great program. $50 a person. The one on Monday is $40. And actually, let me be clear. The Cajun cuisine one, every other Thursday is $50. The Creole Italian one is $40. And the Creole lunch is $40 also. But go check out southernfood.org for a little bit more on that. Friends, wanted to circle back to something I was mentioning there at the top of the show with the whole thing with Tales of the Cocktail and Ann and Paul Tenderman. A lot more news out there. This actually made national news, and you can go Google it and check it out. And again, we're going to revisit some of these issues in a future show, but I, you know, it's out there. Go check out NOLADrinks.com. If you want to see the Facebook broadcast, I don't want to unpack all this now or really get into this now, but I did want to acknowledge it. This was news. It had a great deal of effect, caused a great deal of chatter in the service industry and conversation, and rightfully so, friends. This was not good stuff that went down, but I think what Ashton Berry did and some others assisting her in engaging Ann Tenderman on this was really well done. It was needed and necessary stuff. And I encourage you to explore this issue and look into it and hopefully get something from it and some growth. We all need to continue dialogue here. And I'm very proud of my friends and colleagues and associates in the service industry here in New Orleans for taking this on and trying to do something constructive and engage in dialogue so we all learn something and make some improvements here in our little part of the world, as well as hopefully some ramifications for the larger part of the world there in the service industry. Friends, again, tune in next week. We may actually be taking on this topic next week. We'll see, trying to organize that. But I do know one of the organizers from Top Taco, the upcoming festival on March 23rd, will be on. Then on March 23rd, we've got, I'm trying to remember who we have coming on. We got the shows pretty much planned out for the rest of the month. Let's see, I believe, I know what we're doing. We're going to have friends Katie Dubois and Sam Perez on, and they're doing a great fundraiser coming up on March 25th to benefit the Gulf Restoration Network, and they've been doing some really good work in that regard. They've been going out to the Gulf Coast here in Louisiana. I think we know probably a lot of the threats to both the culture there as well as the environment there, and they've been engaging people, and they've actually been kind of touring bars and talking to people. As we know, bars are places where people are supposed to go talk about things, and that's what they've been doing, so that they're going to be on, and we're going to chat a little bit more about that. Also on the 23rd, or is it the 30th? I can't remember. Coming up, we're going to have an author did a book on New Orleans cocktails. Sarah Baird will be on with us. A whole bunch of good stuff coming up, friends. We're going to revisit our topic with Robert LeBlanc and Sean Josephs, two owners, both LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group and Kenton's, respectively, talking about following on from a conversation we had about a month ago or so about the state of the restaurant business with a particular emphasis on independent sit-down restaurants. That was a fascinating conversation, and I look forward to revisiting that again. So, friends, you can check out the podcast. Go visit NOLADrinks.com for more. We'll have more information on the upcoming shows. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Just look for NOLA Drinks. Let us know what you want to hear us talk about on the show. Friends, thanks for tuning in today. And until then, cheers, y'all.